welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for September 24th. It's brought to you by Shooters in Nagoya. I'm John Gibson, and joining me in cyberspace is a dancing Jim Allen. What's happening, man? You all right there? You got ants in your pants or something?
Ready to roll, man. No, good. I'm good. How are you doing, man?
Hanging in there, hanging in. Was able to, actually, I didn't go to a game today, but I saw a few on TV, and I also got to watch the sumo, which was really, really cool.
Yeah, I was just reading that on our company's database and wish I had seen it. But, yeah, actually only three games today. Three were rained out, so you only needed three TVs to see all the games.
That's right, an iPhone and two TVs. All right, we've got a lot on this week's show. We've got an interview with Josh Whitesell of the Lota Marines. We're going to discuss the Pacific League down the stretch and touch on a whole bunch of other topics. So let's start clearing the bases. All right, so on Wednesday, I got to go out to Tokyo Dome, and I met up with Josh Whitesell, the catcher killer.
What?
He didn't do it on purpose, but I think you guys remember because we talked about it on an earlier show. April 12th and April 13th, on consecutive nights, his backswing bopped a couple of catchers. He hit Hikaru Ito of the Oryx Buffaloes in the temple, in the right temple. And on the interview, you're going to hear me say, hit him in the head, and that was, I misspoke, because he hit, the next night, he hit SoftBank Hawks catcher Toru Hosokawa in the shoulder. Okay. So he was spreading it to all fields.
I'm surprised Hosokawa didn't hit him back.
Hosokawa couldn't get up.
Okay, well, that's if you're going to, he's a tough guy, so if you're going to get him, knock him down.
Yeah, well, he got him pretty good. It was, you know, I went back on YouTube and I watched them to see because, and you'll hear it in the interview, you really get the idea that Josh is not taking all the responsibility for hitting the guys. I mean, part of it, and it was something that I mentioned on the show. One of the catchers moved forward, and it wasn't all Josh's fault. And then the other part is he was new to the league, and they hadn't seen him that much before. And you have to get used to his swing path, as he calls it, particularly his back swing path.
Well, this brings to mind another incident with a catcher, Tomoya Satozaki and Tuffy Rhodes. Was that a case of Satozaki not being used to Tuffy Rhodes' swing path?
Well, it depends on if he's looking for the right cross or the straight left. But, yeah, I saw those guys. I actually was at that game. I went to that game. But yeah. Josh has been sidelined recently with a groin injury, and he just got back, I think, on Friday night. He got back into the lineup, so we'll see how he does. And you know, he's 30 now. I can speak from experience that once you hit that age, you start to suffer these little injuries with the legs sometimes, the torn this, the pulled that, and you've got to slow down sometimes. I don't think he tore anything. I think he pulled it or strained the groin, so you just need time off, and they're doing treatment.
If he had torn it, he wouldn't be back.
That's true. That is true. So, but yeah, if you want to go back and look on YouTube, both of those plays are still there. And you can clearly see Ito moving forward to get to the ball. So it was partially his fault. The Hosokawa incident, I didn't really see him doing anything out of the norm that most catchers don't do. So maybe he was just unfamiliar with Josh, and I guess that kind of thing happens. So, but I don't think you get dropped to the farm for that. Yeah, you hear in the interview, he got sent down to the farm on his birthday, which was April 14th.
Wow.
And I'm just thinking, if this is a Japanese player, they don't do that.
No.
You know, they don't even think about that. But maybe if it is a Japanese player, they make him go over and apologize to everybody on the team and then sent a written formal apology to the team and all kinds, some other kind of garbage that they might do to a Japanese player, but they wouldn't send it to the farm.
I guess what Josh forgot to do was turn around, bow, and tip his helmet to the catcher.
To the sprawled out, writhing on the ground catcher who's not paying attention?
Well, yeah, because it's all about form.
All right, well, let's check out Josh's form in this interview. All right, I'm sitting next to Josh Whites of the Lotte Marines. It's been a while, buddy. We've been trying to get you on the show for a while. You've been ducking us, huh?
Not ducking, just our paths haven't exactly crossed with the right timeline, but today we managed to find a way to get it done.
Well, thanks a bunch for joining us. The first question I have for you is not that hard, I guess, but this has been a memorable season for you. It's been interesting for the team as well. What have been the highlights? What have been the lowlights?
Well, I'd say the highlight was definitely winning the August Player, the MVP of the Month award. I was able to get on a good roll there where my swing felt good and was able to see some pitches and have some really really good games in that stretch. And then the low light was easy when I was sent to the farm on my birthday.
I didn't realize it was your birthday.
Oh yeah, it was an easy choice for the low light of the season.
Now, did that trip to have to the farm have anything to do with your backswings conking catchers on the head?
I was never given the full 411 on exactly what the reason for my demotion, but I'm very much under the impression that that was a large part of it, and that it wasn't a good media relations scenario with the catchers, me injuring two catchers on consecutive nights, so it happened.
Yeah, we talked about it on the show, and I remember one of the catchers, it being a lot of his fault because he moved forward, but what's your take on the situation?
I think it's just a scenario where the foreign player's swing path is significantly different than a lot of the Japanese players.
Because they're not slapping at the ball.
Exactly. And, I've never changed my swing. I've had the same swing since I've been over here. So maybe it was a product of changing leagues and the catchers in the Pacific League hadn't seen me play as much and just... maybe they were moving up a little bit closer. That was putting them in harm's way. So it could be a product of that and just that, I do tend to have a larger backswing because I'm up there trying to get a good pitch to hit and trying to drive the ball and do some damage.
All right, well, you came back finally, and then in August, you won Player of the Month. We like to call it Hitter of the Month on the show because they don't really take in the defensive skills of anybody. But how did you rebound and come back to win that award when you hadn't been facing top-level pitching for a while?
It was definitely a mental adjustment of being in the farm for quite a long time and knowing that I was now getting my chance and I had to take advantage of it. It was coming to the yard every day with a... I was hungry. I wanted to do well. I wanted to help the team. I wanted to help myself, and I wanted to drive the ball every day. And was just able to get my swing in a spot where it was feeling good, and the results came with that.
Now, talking about results, what pitchers have given you a tough time in the Pacific League?
I'd say the toughest at-bats I've had so far were against Randy Williams. He's pitched me really tough, and he's got pretty good stuff as far as he's a big, tall lefty that kind of steps across his body, so he hides the ball well, and on top of that, he's made very good pitches against me. So combine those factors, and I haven't had very good success against him.
Any other guys?
Let me think. I haven't really had so much success against the Oryx pitchers. I know that overall, like their team ERA isn't ideal in the league standings. But they've pitched me tough and they've made good pitches. And it hasn't, as a staff, they've done a very good job against me. So we play them this weekend. Hopefully, I'll be healthy enough to get in there and hopefully I can redeem myself against them.
Okay. Now you started out with the Swallows in the Central League before coming over here. What is the biggest difference you've noticed between the two leagues?
I would say that the Central League, there's a lot more parity, where in the Pacific League, it's more where every team can really beat any other team on any given night. It's not so much, it's not so much like that in the Central League.
Huh, that's interesting. I didn't know you were going to go that way. All right, now, this team won a lot of games in the first half, and, I wasn't buying in. And then all of a sudden, I said, the pitching is really what's carrying this team. It's not just all the slap hitters getting little hits here and there, and then an occasional home run. So as soon as I bought in, you guys started having trouble winning games. And again, the pitching was, I think, the factor for that for the most part. Talk about this season from the beginning up to now.
Well, I think, in any given season, there's going to be peaks and valleys. And as you said, the team started off really hot, so it was inevitable that at some point there was going to be a valley. And it's just a matter of how you climb yourself out of there. And, you know, there's a lot of good players on this team and, like, a really good pitching staff. So, you know, the season's not over yet, and anything can happen. And, I have confidence in our guys that we're going to finish strong.
Any of the teams in the race, because I know a lot of the SoftBank pitchers, they lost so many pitchers in the top half of their rotation, essentially.
Yeah.
And everybody expected them to fall, and I kept saying, I think they're at least a third-place team, if not better. Have they surprised you this year?
The depth of their pitching is unbelievable, because every time they send a guy out there, he's got, you know, he's got quality stuff and he's making good pitches. So, like you said, they lost their top of the rotation, but they've been able to fill in that with guys that are, you know, doing remarkable jobs. I mean, from Takeda to Yang to, I mean, Setsu's having at the top of the rotation now, having an unbelievable year. I mean, they really didn't miss too much of a beat, even with losing those guys, which is just a, you know, I'm sure it's a tribute to the entire organization from the top down, from scouting to development, and, you know, just how they run things over there.
Well, I know this team runs things fairly well. You guys look like you can come back and make another final push for the playoffs.
I'm hoping I can get back out there soon.
All right, good luck. Get healthy.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for joining us.
All right, well, again, Josh, thank you very much for sitting down with us. He was doing some rehab stuff that day, so we had plenty of time to talk, and we talked after the interview as well. But we appreciate it, buddy. Thank you.
John, your throat sounds a lot better today.
Not much better than last week?
No, when you were talking with Josh Whitesell. So for you listeners, you missed the sound of John Gibson hacking and choking.
I was just hacking. There was no choking going on.
Okay, good. Okay, so no choking, folks.
All right, well, what caught your ear? What stood out for you?
Well, it's always nice talking to Josh for a couple of reasons. Reason one is he has a kind of unusual ability to step back from the game and analyze it in kind of an abstract way. And we've done this, you know, I've done this before. And the other thing is that he speaks really, really well. You know, he has interesting, you know, he has a good grasp of the language and turns of phrase, and it's always a pleasure to listen to him. So that was kind of, you know, that's the norm for Josh, so I enjoyed hearing that. I haven't seen him since he was with the Swallows, since we had a discussion just about a year ago. Anyway, thinking about what he's saying is, first of all, yeah, the parity in the leagues. Well, actually, I'm going to go back a little bit and talk about Oryx. I thought, you know, his comment that I love, you know, I think he has a future in politics.
Because?
Well, because his comment about Oryx Buffalo's pitcher having a less than ideal ERA. I know 3.46, you know, a few years ago, you know, you get a pretty fat contract with a 3.46 ERA if you're a pitcher, but
not a bad gig there.
Yeah, not. Some guys got good deals with that last year. Do you hear us, Shuming Che? Okay, now. Yeah. But is this year in the Pacific League, 3.46? Nah, it's not even ideal. It kind of stinks. But, you know, for Josh to come out and say, it's not ideal, I love it. So politics may be your future, Josh.
Yeah, I was amazed that he actually pointed to the Oryx pitchers giving him a rough time.
Well, yeah, I mean, this happens. I mean, that's like, you know, we talked in some depth about Hiroshima's ability to beat up Yokohama and Yokohama's ability to beat up the Swallows. These things kind of happen, you know.
Yeah.
Patterns occur. If you flip a coin 30 times, it's not going to shock anybody if you get 24 heads.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe in a row, but okay, anyway, moving along. The other one is the parity. Now, this really didn't surprise me. You were expecting a different answer, obviously.
Right.
But the parity doesn't surprise. I mean, I certainly understand what he's saying. You're not going to have, even though, you know, situations change every year, and last year the Pacific League was much like, as we predicted it, the Central League this year was much like the Pacific League last year.
Mm-hmm.
We had, you know, five, essentially four teams competing for second and third play. Now, this is going to happen, you know, where one team dominates. It's going to happen a lot more in the Central League for the obvious reason is that you have the Omiri Giants, and they have the money, and they have the popularity, and they have the benefits and the status
mm-hmm.
that allow them to sign. They can't sign everybody they want, and not everybody wants to play for them, but they can sign, you know, they have a step ahead of most other teams
in right.
any given player.
Right.
Therefore, they're always going to be almost always going to be a top contender, and then every now and then they're just going to have a season like they're having this year in which nobody can compete with them. And then
right.
after they win, what, 6-16 at the start of the season or something.
Right.
So, yeah, I think the parity is an interesting one. What did you expect? What kind of answer did you expect? I'm curious.
Well, I mean, usually you ask a guy a question like that, and he says, well, you know, the pitchers are different, this guy, that guy, the ballparks are different, the travel's different. So I didn't expect him to go that direction. It just kind of caught me off guard because, you know, you kind of figure he's seen a bunch of new pitchers and that's where he was going to take the conversation, and it just, you know, I was taken aback by that. But the thing about it was I'm still mad at the Marines because this is a guy, I mean, remember last year, Okawari-kun, Takuya Nakamura, the Seibu Lions, out-homered them by himself.
Right.
And they went out and got a guy who's got some pop, who can leave the yard and is a big threat in the lineup, and then they just send him down just because of these freak accidents, just like a guy hitting four home runs in a game or heard somebody pitching back-to-back no-hitters. It was just freak accidents that just happened on back-to-back nights. If it would have happened, you know, one on opening day and one on the final day of the season, nothing would have happened. They would have just said, hey, next season, be careful.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that it happened on back-to-back nights and they sent him to the minors, and like he said, he never got the true or the complete rundown of why he was being shipped out to the minors. But I thought it was really good for him, and he you know, he said he came back with some hunger. And I thought it was really impressive that he came back and was able to win August hitter of the month.
Indeed. Well, he's been on a couple of tears this year, and in that month he's been on several tears this year, and he had two of them in August, so it was quite impressive.
So now the Oryx pitcher thing is interesting, but you know, Josh has a really violent swing, and you know that finishing part of his swing, you know, when he comes, his bat's already through the zone, and now he's entering the follow through. That whip that he has in his swing, you know, that coming back, if I can imagine, you know, that when I did go back and look and see Hosokawa getting hit in the shoulder, he really got him pretty good. And I can't remember how long Hosokawa was out. I don't think they deactivated him. So, yeah, as I recall, he wasn't deactivated, but he was out of the lineup for a couple few games there. And the other thing that surprised me about his chat was that he lauded the SoftBank pitching staff as a whole, not just the rotation, but the staff as a whole. And did you notice that he uttered the exact words that I used on the show, I think it was last year, when I was saying how impressed I was with SoftBank's player development, and particularly with the pitchers? And he
yep.
said the same thing.
Yes, I did. It struck me at the moment that, in fact, he was plagiarizing.
Well,
stop, Josh. Stop stealing my man's work. Joking, dude.
The same words, exact same words. I wonder if he listens to the podcast. I doubt it, but.
Well, who knows? I mean, we have some listeners. We never, you know, we have always finding people who listen that we didn't know were there or couldn't imagine they'd be listening. So, yeah, it might be. And I mean, no, I steal whatever I can from you because I gotta raise my level.
Raise your level. Raise your game. All right. Well, I guess I have to lower mine so you go somewhere else.
okay.
But anyway, yeah, good. It was a good talk with him. I hope he's healthy enough to finish out the year strong, as they need it. They need every run they can get right now.
Then, you know, they've been playing very well the last week or so, which is, you know, what says what? That's normal for the Pacific League. Everybody
has it says that they were playing the Eagles.
And the Buffaloes.
And the Buffaloes, too. Yeah, that's right.
The biggest news was that their manager was leaving.
Leaving with a boot print in his backside.
Yes. That was okay, long story. I'm not going to get into that tonight. Okay. Yeah, it was interesting, and I've liked some of the things the Marines do, although the managing is questioned. I don't want to really go into it too much. They still have a chance to finish third in this thing if somebody, you know, if a couple of teams drop dead.
Well, you know, they have a chance, and they're going to play some teams that obviously they're going to have to beat to do it, but they're in it.
Starting with the Fighters.
Yeah, they're in it. I don't see this thing. Like I said, I envision, and it's too bad I'm going to be on vacation when most of it happens, but I envision this going down to the very last pitch, and none of the playoff seeds are set until that last pitch is thrown.
Wow. Wouldn't that be cool?
That would just be so awesome. I would have to just stay up and watch baseball on the Internet from the States.
Well, the last pitch, that's scary from a sports writer's perspective.
Well, yeah, if you work at a newspaper, it's really going to be hard to get ready and get everything in. But if you're working for a news service like you, then you're all right.
I still got a file on the, you know, on the whistle. Where'd that come from? That sounds kind of soccery. Okay.
Yee.
Got a file on the last pitch, and you got to have a story ready. So. Yeah. I get two stories ready.
Well,
okay.
As far as I saw on the schedule, there's probably only one game that last day. So.
True. Okay. So, anyway, speaking about the Pacific League, shall we?
Mm-hmm.
We had a great series this weekend.
Awesome series. Fantastic.
We had three come-from-behind wins, the first two by the Lions, turned over, you know, the Fighters' bullpen blew a one-run lead in the seventh on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
In the eighth on Saturday.
Well, they got a four-run lead early. I think through one and a half innings they had a four-run lead. They gave one back in the bottom of the second, and then the Lions battled back little by little.
They did. And then today the Lions had a two-run lead, and the second they had a two-run lead, it's like the game was over, and the Fighters beat them.
Well, it didn't seem like that to me. Anyway, I had that game on iPhone, actually, at the office, and I wasn't able to see the pitches Kishi was throwing, and I wasn't really able to get a good gauge of his stuff, and you know how watching things on iPhone can be. But I don't know if it's because he was on shorter than normal rest, but he had 5 days rest coming in to that game today, and he seemed to tire a little bit.
Well, he seemed... the Lions, the bottom of the sixth inning, excuse me, the bottom of the fifth inning for the Lions was awfully, it wasn't, not a lot happened in it, but there were a lot of pick-off throws.
Mm-hmm.
There were only two guys got on base, but it just seemed to go on a long time, and when Kishi came out, he threw three straight balls to Itoi. Yoshio Itoi.
Mm-hmm.
Itoi was looking at the fourth pitch, took it, and he made a pretty good, pitch on a slider. It wasn't that bad of a pitch, but Itoi tagged it, and then the Lions disintegrated, and the right fielder, Yutaro Asaki, is a pretty good outfielder. He's a little guy, and...
He is a little guy.
A little guy. And Itoi hits the ball, and I don't recall if it hit directly off the wall.
I couldn't tell, but I just assumed it did.
Hit it on a hop. Either way, he gets the ball. He takes the carom off the ball, off the wall. He turns to face the infield, and he drops the ball. Now, Itoi's already going back to second. He's going to be happy with that double because he didn't see him dropping the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But now, at this point... Osaki is oblivious. They're both oblivious of what's going on. Itoi's oblivious that Osaki's dropped the ball, and Osaki's oblivious of the fact that Itoi's not doesn't want to go anywhere. And so he just uncorks this throw that ends up pretty close to where the fighter's bench is. Nobody can catch it. This is a big, awful, hanging. It looks like he's trying to punt it, get as much hang time as possible. And Itoi just kind of like walks over to third base.
It looked like somebody was pushing him to third base. He didn't want to go. He's holding up with every step, and then halfway through he says, well, I better do something or I'm going to be out.
Okay, so anyway, yeah, but there was nobody to catch it. It's like the Lions had to scramble for somebody to go get the ball. Anyway.
And then Kishi hangs this curve to, and his curve is normally really sharp, really nice breaking curve, and it was right up there on a tee.
Have a good curve. And today was a really funny day because almost all the big hits came on curveballs, and at least from the two starters. And Nakamura had a wicked hook. This kid, I was really looking forward to this game. Now, this is a sideline. He's from Saitama. I should say he pitched his
high school. You're talking about Masaru Nakamura.
Who's known as the Darvish of Saitama.
Mm-hmm.
I guess he's because he's skinny. But anyway, he doesn't throw that hard. He does have a bunch of pitches. He seems to throw either his slider or his curveball. He never seems to throw both of them in the same game. He's got a changeup that gets hit every single game he throws it. And thanks to NPB Tracker for that little nugget of information.
Thank you, NPB Tracker.
Okay. Anyway, he had a wicked hook today. But he missed with about three of them, and two of them really, really, really hurt him. And Kishi didn't have much command of his curve, and he was working sliders. He felt kind to Nakata, and he's throwing slider, slider, slider. And Nakata said today he'd been struggling against curveballs recently, and he'd missed a lot. And so he figured he'd been working on it. He figured sooner or later somebody's going to try to test him with a curveball.
Mm-hmm.
And Kishi tried to test him twice, and he lined
he
one.
He pasted both of them, yeah.
Covered one in the first inning that was hit right at third baseman Esteban Germán, and then the other one landed in the seat among the fans in left center field.
And then the double he had came on, it looked like a curve to me. Again, I'm watching on iPhone.
That's hard to tell. I think he was saying it was a changeup, although it looked like a slider to me.
Like a curve on iPhone, but...
Well, that was from off of Randy Williams. And, anyway, I don't want to talk too much about that one, but that one was a pitch where... I can't say it was kind of an interesting game all the way around. The start pitching was interesting. Both guys got out of a jam. Both guys were pretty good. The Fighters bullpen was rock solid. The Lions bullpen looked like the bullpen we started the season talking about.
Right. Yeah. So the Lions, they're going to play three games this week against the. They're going to play at home against the Eagles, and then they're going to play the Fighters one more time, I think they have, at Sapporo Dome on Friday.
Okay, also.
What's that?
It's Friday, Saturday.
Friday, Saturday. That's right. Friday, Saturday, and then back at home, they're going to play Oryx on the 30th. So we'll watch and see how that goes. They have another important series up there. I can't say that I can't wait because I'm leaving the country on Friday, so I won't see either of these games, but... I will land and try to watch one of the games late night in the States.
Yeah, so he'll arrive at LAX and he'll be the only one shouting at the plane, "What the Fighters do?"
Now, what about the Central League? As I kind of predicted, I thought it was going to go that way. I think, remember talking about it, I think it was three shows ago, the Swallows, the Carp, I said the Swallows were going to take that third place slot. There's still time for the Carp, but they look like they've been shot, and they're starting to fade.
Shot. Well, yeah. Somebody was fish in a barrel, I think. They shot themselves.
Yeah. Seven straight losses. That'll do it in September.
It was kind of interesting because we You know, as I mentioned earlier, we were talking about the weird records of the carp falling from A stars against each other. And in this situation, the carp around whacked the swallows around whacked the carp, whacked the base stars, and then the base stars came in and whacked the carp.
Yeah. Interesting. Too bad for the carp. We were really pulling for them. I think they still have 3 games left against the swallows, but it's really not going to matter by the time they get there. And the big series that they had head-to-head, the carp got swept, and they just really never recovered, and they hit the skids. I mean, like I said, losing. They picked the worst time for their longest losing streak of the year, 7 games, so maybe next year.
So they're 7 games back with just a handful of games to play. It's going to take a lot of miracles from the carp, you know, the carp prayer, or the carp man praying. Well, if they do, good for them, but it's a tough road to hoe.
And I do predict, and I said that last time as well, that I think the Swallows are going to beat the Dragons, and that was before we got the report that Kazuki Yoshimi will not be pitching for a month with a broken bone in his elbow.
Bone spur. Was there something new on that today?
No, there was nothing new on it. The report that I saw just said broken bone in the elbow. I don't know what bone it was.
The ulna.
Yeah. Unfortunate. So, yeah, I think the Swallows have an excellent chance of advancing.
They look like bits and pieces sewn together.
I don't even think you could take the All-Stars from the Chunichi Dragons and the Swallows and put them together and find a team that's going to beat the Giants.
You could if they were all healthy, but the problem is nobody's healthy. The Swallows are missing a third of their, 40% of their lineup, and the Dragons have not been that healthy this year and just playing badly. So,
well, they're playing badly. They're just not dumb. I mean, they're 20 games over .500. They're not a bad team.
They're not, but as a team, they're playing badly. But some of the people, some of the key parts have been
broken.
Pretty much like broken and about ready to get swept under the carpet. You hear?
Yes. Yeah. If you make that much noise, you get replaced, not oil.
Rust.
Now, unfortunately, the Yokohama Bay Stars locked up last place again. I think, is it confirmed? It's a done deal, right? Cause
see the news today on that in that regard.
I'm pretty sure. So it'll be a 5th consecutive year that they've finished in last place, the 9th time since the year 2000. But they've been worse in their history.
They have. I mean, it was a real interesting season. They've showed. As they did, I think, actually not really as they did, but I think for the first time in a few years, they showed a little fight in September.
Yeah, I would agree. They were still in a place where the games were relevant to them because they wanted to finish in 5th place, and it wasn't a situation where every single team other than the Bay Stars had a chance to move up.
Well, they had a head-to-head, 3 games head-to-head against the Tigers. They took 2 out of 3, so.
Yeah.
No, they have played well, and they've showed, I think they've played about nearly as well as you could expect from that team. Because part of the typical for the Bay Stars is, we're beat, so we're going to get beat again.
Yeah. Their heart's not in it. They're more interested in getting off the field as quickly as possible instead of, winning games.
Be disheartened, but I think having Tigers within fitting distance has made a difference.
Yeah, unfortunately, though, this stretch of 5 consecutive years in last place is not as bad as their 1954 to 1959 stretch, 6 seasons that they finished in last place. But the good news is that they won the league title in 1960. So I guess they have 1 more year of finishing in last, and then we can expect them to come out of nowhere and win the Central League title.
I think, yeah, that's possible if they can bring manager Osamu Mihara back from the dead.
Oh, God.
Well, if they can do that, then I guess the answer is anything is possible.
Oh, no. Michael West Bay, don't you go grab anything and try to bring people back from the dead. Your defibrillator won't work here, buddy. Oh, man. All right. Well, and let's also talk about the incredible season that Shinosuke Abe of the Yomiuri Giants is having. You know, I would actually, at this point, who cares now, right? He might as well win the Triple Crown as well as good as the season as he's putting together.
Sure.
And I wouldn't mind rooting for that. Now, the last time we had a Triple Crown winner in the Central League was, Randy Bass, who we talked to three shows ago in 1986. In fact, he was the Triple Crown winner in 1985 and 1986. And our last Triple Crown winner in Japan was, you got this right, I asked you before the show, and it was Nobuhiko Matsunaka of the Daiei / SoftBank Hawks. In 2004, they were still Daiei?
2004, they were the last year under Daiei.
Okay, so Daiei Hawks, and before that, in the Pacific League, Hiromitsu Ochiai was the last Triple Crown winner before he did. And he did it back in 1986, so there was a big gap of 20-plus, or almost 20 years, where there was no Triple Crown winner. So Abe's right there. He's three home runs behind Vladimir Valentin of the Swallows, and he's comfortably ahead in just about everything else as long as he keeps up. I mean, he's hitting. You can't get anything past the guy these days. Nothing.
I know. It's just amazing. And he's he's just been on a tear. He's been playing big in big games, and then, of course, now the problem is there aren't any big games left for him to play. And I don't understand this. They put him at first base the other day. I guess they figured he had enough alcohol the day before.
They've been putting him at first base in some games here and there recently. This in September,
but
Didn't want any balls. They didn't want him missing any balls behind play because they might whack him right in the head and give him a concussion, right?
So, anyway, yeah. So, let's say he does this. I mean, you did ask me, and I, last week, what's the difference between this year and last year? And I think the difference is about 20 at-bats because his season is really not any different. I mean, he's got the difference is he's got bigger RBI totals and he's got more home runs. But in terms of the quality of the season, it's right where it was last year. The whole league was down. The whole league's up a little bit this year. He's up a little bit this year. The Giants have won the pennant by a big margin, and he'll finish, instead of being the best hitter who doesn't qualify for the batting average, he missed it by about 15 at-bats last year.
Mm-hmm.
He'll be the best hitter in the league who does qualify for the batting average. So the difference is going to be 20 at-bats. Difference between getting one vote for the MVP and winning it in a landslide, it can be 10 at-bats.
What are these people thinking?
Last year. Okay. Now, on another note, not only would he be – okay, you asked also when was the last catcher to win the Triple Crown.
I have that. I found it.
No, I knew you knew.
No, I didn't know. I found it. I kept looking.
I had confidence in your ability to look this up. Katsuya Nomura.
And I wasn't surprised.
No, you shouldn't have been surprised by him. He was. I think one of the greatest catchers who ever played baseball. I'd put him, put him up there with Johnny Bench.
Johnny Bench, I would too. But I think I would put him above Johnny Bench because of all the games he played.
Okay. He also leads Japan in games played.
Yeah. 1965, he batted .320 with 42 homers and 110 RBIs.
Right. Now, okay, I'm going to put a little twist on this. Now, if Abe wins the batting title,
uh-huh,
he will be the third catcher in history to win a batting title. Behind, obviously, you get one right.
Right, Nomura has one.
The other.
Oh! you got to, well, no, you don't have to.
This is during your life.
Furuta.
Good man.
Atsuya Furuta.
Okay.
Well, I remember that he came to me. I remember that he
he won a batting title? Because remember, we talked about him in a recent show, so I did the research. So I just had to remember.
Now, if Abe wins the home run title, he'll be the third catcher to win a home run title.
Oh, you're just mad because I got the other one right.
I'm not mad. I love you, man.
So what's the question? Can you repeat the question?
Yes. If Abe wins the home run title, he'll be the third catcher. Who is the other catcher besides him and Nomura? And the answer, this is a tough one because neither of us were here then. This is one that Wayne would know and taunt people who weren't here. It would be Koichi Tabuchi, former manager of the Daiei Hawks, former coach for the Japanese national team, currently the batting coach and kind of bench statue for the Rakuten Golden Eagles.
Bench statue. You're beautiful. All right, well, that's good. Good history. I love it. I love it. I love that stuff. Awesome. So, we'll root for – I mean, we love Coco. We love Coco, and I appreciate – the man's got some power, but, you know, when a guy's having this good a season, you got to root for him. All right, so let's go to fielding questions. All right, the first one comes from Steve, and he made a post on my blog, and he says, I'm interested to know why you said Kanemoto's Japanese is hard to translate. My Japanese is around level 2 in the Japanese proficiency test, but not good enough to get an impression of a player's personality from how they articulate themselves. I'd be interested to hear what you have to say. Thanks. Well, all I can say is if you listen to him, and if you're a level 2 person, what I'm going to do is I'm posting his press conference, the scripts from the press conference, and I'm going to post that in this podcast post on the blog. So you can click on it and just take a read. It's not that hard, but it's just that normal players or usual players, maybe about 70% or so, give you the normal everyday phrases and everyday phrasing. And his is just a level up from that. And Jim used the word dignified, and I used the word...
Well, I know what you're saying. Yeah, I mean, it's... I thought about this, too. It's a wonderful question, because I really struggled with the translation. And the reason I struggled is that he packs a lot of meaning into very few words. And he uses words in somewhat unusual contexts, and he... So he creates image. He creates very powerful images with what he says, and I think so that makes it hard to translate. And he's going to be a media analyst next year, apparently. And I think the reason he's going to do that job is because it pays more than being a poet. But I think he could if he wanted to be.
Yeah, I use the word distinguished, and you use the word dignified, and I think both of the words they're very similar in meaning in the sense that. He doesn't just give you the straightforward. It's not that political kind of guy who's using difficult non everyday words.
Okay.
He's using mostly everyday words, but he throws in these phrases that.
Yeah. Okay.
Like we said, are distinguished and dignified. It's not the typical baseball player doesn't use them. It seems.
He's eloquent.
Mm-hmm. I mean.
Yeah, eloquent in Japanese. Equals really hard to get the gist of and make it sound properly, you know, make it sound good in English.
Yeah. Other guys who I've also seen this from is are Kenshin Kawakami of the Chunichi Dragons and on occasion Tatsunori Hara of the Giants, the skipper. He sometimes uses some phrases that are...
He uses phrases sometimes that he doesn't know what he's talking about.
Maybe that's what it is. He's prepared and he memorizes his lines.
I think he does. I'll agree with you about Hara. Sometimes he says things that are incredibly profound, and other times it sounds like he just wanted to copy his mentor Shigeo Nagashima, the time at Koshien Stadium when he said we played aggressive defense and defensive offense. Mr. Tsuzaki, Giants beat writer emeritus for the Yomiuri Shimbun. What's he talking about? He says, I don't know if you find out, tell me.
Well, Steve, if you're a level 2 proficiency guy, as I am, because I've never passed level 1 of that so-called test, then I invite you to just come on and go to the post and just look through the speech that he made and see what you can pick up and see what you can't. Next question is from our correspondent in Tokorozawa, Mike. And he says, hey, guys, loved your show this week. This would have been last week. In particular, the debate on MVPs. Now, while I agree with both of your selections, I think that Tadashi Setsu of the SoftBank Hawks should get some consideration, too. I'm not a big fan of pitchers winning the award, but he's been lights out recently, leading the Hawks back into the race for the league lead. What do you think? So I posted on the Facebook page, who said the Hawks were not in the race? They've been in the race. They were just in fourth place, but they were never out of the race.
Yeah, last year they, I mean, and who says that the guy has to be even the best player in the league to win the MVP? I mean, that's the way it works in the Pacific League, and in fact, that's the way it often works in Japan. So, right. Or even best player on your team. Okay, now.
So, yeah, the reason I said MVP was because I thought Yoshikawa meant so much to his team. I think Setsu probably is the guy you might, if there's going to be a Sawamura Award this year, I think he's the guy maybe who's the front runner. Yeah. But the MVP, I would turn to a guy who really made a difference in that rotation when there was a gaping hole called Yu Darvish removed from it.
Wow.
Well, he's not a gaping hole anymore.
Okay, he left a gaping hole. I thought you said he was a gaping hole. Okay, all right. Now that's this is a great question. And do I think? And I agree with Mike. My thinking about us having a starting pitcher as the MVP is that it's a silly thing to do in this day and age when starting pitchers aren't pitching 350, 400 innings.
Right.
Now, just because they can't have the impact. I mean, when you take out the fact that batters have a bigger impact on an at-bat than a pitcher does, and you take out the fact that the defense has a big impact on what happens after the batter hits the ball,
right?
There's not a lot left for the pitcher to take credit for, to really say this belongs to me.
So, I agree with you.
So, now, that's one side of this story. However, the other side is this, in which it's been in the back of my mind for some while. I think the other side of this is that when you go into a game, you know, if you're a batter and you have if you're a position player and you have a bad day, what does that mean? Well, it means a lot if you're a catcher or her first baseman who can't catch or something or a shortstop. You can cost your team a game on occasion.
Yep.
But there's eight other guys batting. There's eight other guys fielding.
Mm-hmm.
You're a pitcher and you're having a bad day. You know, this like eight out of nine times your team's, if you're a starting pitcher and you're having a bad day, eight out of nine times your team's going to lose the game.
Yeah. You can't hide it.
Yeah. Well, not you can't hide, but you,
no, you can't hide a bad game from a pitcher. You can hide a bad game from a position player at the plate.
Well, yeah. And more often than not. Yeah. If you, that being the case, I think I agree with that. What I just said, I think, I don't know where this rates, but I think I'll have to in the future, you know, tone down my assessment of, you know, 400 innings to something like 300. Okay, pitch 300 and we'll consider you for an MVP.
Yeah.
Or a Setsu. But, yeah, Sawamura Award, I think, yeah, he's probably going to get it.
Yeah. I mean, of the benchmarks, what are there, seven benchmarks? Game started, wins, complete games, winning percentage, innings pitched, earned run average, and strikeouts. And these guys are almost 1-2 in all those.
And the Sawamura Award is not the equivalent of the Cy Young Award. I have to point this out a lot in stories. It's the award for the starting pitcher who best exemplifies the heroic, legendary Eiji Sawamura.
Right.
Which doesn't have, it has a lot winning, it has a lot to do with innings pitched, it has a lot to do with complete games. It's sort of like it's a throwback. It's like let's go look for the best dinosaur. So anyway.
Well, I thought what you said before is a bunch of old farts sitting around in a room saying, look at these guys. I was better than this guy.
Oh, there's a lot of that. I mean, that is, in fact, pretty much what the Selwyn Moore Award voting sounds like usually. The discussion is, you know, today's pitchers really aren't as good as we were.
Yeah. Who can we thumb our nose at publicly by giving this false award to?
When they gave it to Kenta Maeda, it was a great case of, well, yeah, he's actually fulfilled all the, but, you know, right now it's easy. Right now it's easy because it's a pitcher's era. But 10 years ago, 10, 12 years ago, every year it was like, how come today's pitchers are so lousy? Well, dudes, the pitching isn't lousy. The game is what it is. It was right. Different when you played. It's different when they're playing. That's the way it is. Okay.
All right. And our third question comes from Claudio in Toronto. So he says, in your previous show, you guys talked about the retirement of several Japanese stars. And, of course, we left out Makoto Imaoka, who retired 2 days after we did that show. Anyway, that's a side note. What about foreign stars? Has any accomplished foreigner in NPB ever had a retirement ceremony or even a press conference? I don't remember any. Then he goes on to name LaRon Lee, Randy Bass, Warren Cromartie, Tuffy Rhodes, Wally Yonamine, and Victor Starfin. And he said, essentially, Alex Cabrera is about to leave Japan without having either a conference or a ceremony.
I'm gonna pass a comment. I don't know really how to have a. I mean, Alex Cabrera's had a great career in Japan for sure. I don't know what you say about that. He doesn't have a team is the problem. Yeah, as far as the last or who might have, I would guess that the last. I would guess there have been retirement ceremonies for foreign players, but I would limit them to very few players who knew they were retiring.
That's what I was going to say. I think most imports are unceremoniously dumped out of the moving car on the freeway.
Oh, no, not on the freeway. They slow down to 20.
I just don't see it. I mean, the guys I remember who had really good careers, because I wasn't here when Randy Bass was here, so I just know that I've never seen any footage on TV. Every time we see footage of him, It's of him hitting and everything, but we never see anything about him crying and having one of these press conferences or anything else.
That's Randy Bass didn't have a press conference because Randy Bass was persona non grata.
Right. Another guy I remember, Alonzo Powell with the Chunichi Dragons, was, you know, 3-time batting champion, and they just kind of pushed him to the end of the bench and then used him as a pinch hitter, and then he was gone.
They traded him to the Tigers.
And then who else? I don't know. I mean, let's say Alex Ramirez were to retire, what would he do?
They'd have a ceremony for him, no doubt.
But so, who would it be? Would it be the Swallows? Would it be the Giants? Would it be the Bay Stars?
The Bay Stars. Whoever uniform he was wearing will try to cash in on it. That's the way it works. Now, as far as who is the last player with a ceremony? Now, I'm going to venture to say that Kaku Genji.
Ah,
probably had a retirement ceremony.
I remember watching that.
I don't remember it, but I would be surprised if he didn't, because he was a very popular player and a great, great player for the Dragons, completely associated with the Dragons.
Yeah. Now,
another player who I think Wally Yonamine probably did, because, again, here's a player who went from being he was a former MVP. He was not a good player with the Dragons after he was dumped by Yomi Uri, but he went on to be a Dragons coach and a manager. And I'm certain that at some stage in there, they had to have had a thanks Wally day, because there was a lot of love for him wherever he went.
Right. Well, I'll do some more, Claudio, research on the internet, see if I can find anything else. I did find a picture of Victor Starfin after he got his 300th win, which was really nice, but I don't know that he even had a ceremony. I do also recall, and like I said, I did see that the Kaku Genji, because I think he came on to throw to one pitcher or one player, and then after the game he made a speech. This is a long time ago, and I could barely understand Japanese, so I didn't know what he was talking about, but I did remember seeing that. But I also remember embattled, currently embattled, Boston Red Sox
skipper Bobby Valentine making an emotional speech at the end of his successful but very bitter run in Chiba. I think he just grabbed the mic and started talking, but we...
the team didn't want him to have one.
Yeah.
That was 2009, and they tried, the Lotte Marines were doing their best to get him to eat his own contract by criticizing the team, and they basically threw the season. You know, sumo wrestlers have had their careers taken away from them for doing what the Lotte Marines front office did in 2009. They tanked the season,
yeah.
And to get rid of Valentine to save a couple of million dollars, which I don't know if I guess if somebody was going to offer me a couple of million dollars to tank a season, I might take it. I don't know, but you all know my address, so if you have them, you can send them in. Anyway.
What season would this be? Wait a second. Anyway, go ahead.
Of course, there has to be a season to tank. Anyway, they tanked the whole season to try to get rid of Valentine to annoy him enough to make him leave. And then they didn't want to give him a ceremony, but it was arranged by the many, many friends of Bobby who thought that he deserved it. And he rightfully did deserve it. He was
definitely
in many ways the best things that ever happened to that franchise.
Definitely. But that's really how it is in Japan for foreign players. The love you receive is equal to the love of your stats or something like that. Something beatly.
Beatly. That's, you could be a poet.
All right. Well, Mike, Steve, and Claudio, thank you very much for the letters. We'll hope that we get MP3 questions next time.
We want to hear your voices on the air.
Vivant, as Jim says. So, yeah, send those MP3s to yakyujohn@gmail.com, and we'll play them on the show. Now, a programming note, we will record the show as usual while I'm in the States, hopefully. But my blog will end on Thursday in Japan because that's when I'll be returning to California for about 10 days. So for all of those who read my blog, if you do read it, know that that'll be the last day. And I don't think I'll write the playoffs unless you guys want me to. So somebody, one note, all it takes is one note, and I will write about the playoffs. Otherwise, I think the playoff games are out there on the Internet, and I don't have to write about them. So I hear otherwise, that'll be the last day. All right, so enjoy this last stretch. It's going to be awesome. Pacific League, the last pitch, deciding the playoff order.
That would be cool. Thank you for listening, folks.
All right, everybody. Enjoy your baseball.